how come after all the changes, I mean, you know, we had a black president, we've had civil rights, we've had the women's movement, why does patriarchy persist? So the reason this book came into being, my co-author, Naomi Snyder, she was a student. She was a human rights lawyer who signed up for a seminar I teach at NYU with my colleague David Richards called Resisting Injustice. And so the week that we read my book, The Birth of Pleasure, where I talk about the research I did with girls, about how, you know, the strength of girls' voices, you know, and you were talking about Forrest just before, and I don't know how many of your listeners read this, I think it's this 15-year-old girl in Norway who spoke out about climate change and started this school strike. And it was like the children, you know, saying, we have to talk about this. Anyway, in my research with girls, it was about the strength of girls' voices up until when they reach adolescence, and then the pressure on girls not to say what they're really feeling and thinking, but to say what other people want them to feel or think or know. And then the pressures on young boys not to show their sensitivity and their tenderness, you know, which are called girly or gay, to be so-called real boys. That happens, you know, to boys when they start school. Anyway, Naomi read this book, and in her weekly reflection paper, she began to write about her own experience of the death of her father when she was 5 years old, and how after that experience of just shattering loss, even though she wanted love, I mean, she wanted to love and be loved, she was afraid to really bring herself fully into her relationships for fear that she would experience loss again. So she picked up a quote from one of the girls in my studies who said, this girl was the valedictorian of her high school class, she said, if I were to say what I was really feeling and thinking, no one would want to be with me, my voice would be too loud. And Naomi said, wait a minute, these girls sound like me, but they didn't have, you know, death of their father. So she said, is patriarchy persisting not only because people with power don't want to give up their power, that we all know, but also because it's a defense against loss? And I read this paper and I thought, whoa, who are you? I mean, this was so interesting to me, and it really advanced, you know, the thinking that I had done in terms of my studies in my book, and to really take on this question, is patriarchy persisting in part because it serves a psychological function? And Naomi and I started to work together, and then we gave a talk together that happened to be, I invited her to join me in this conference. And the talk was scheduled for the night after Donald Trump was elected. You know, we thought originally when we started writing we would have to argue that, yes, patriarchy does persist. I mean, you know, it privileges some men over other men and all men over women. With the election of Trump, I mean, there was no argument. And then John Thompson from Polity Press said to us, this is a book, why don't you write it? And we write the book in two voices, Naomi's voice and my voice, as a dialogue between us as we explore this question. Is there a psychology driving patriarchy that will help us understand a politics which, on the face of it, in some ways feels really inexplicable? You know, it's really almost a revolution in the human sciences to say, wait a minute, you know, we are born as relational, responsive beings, as humans. That's who we are. All of us, you know, across the whole gender spectrum, we have a voice, meaning even before we have language, you know, babies cry. We can communicate our experience. And also we desire and we have even, you know, the rudiments of the ability to engage responsively with others. So there's this two-minute video called the Still Face Experiment that shows what happens when a one-year-old baby's efforts to connect with their mother, or it could be their father, are thwarted. And there's this sequence. You see the baby protest, and then if the protest is ineffective, it moves to despair and then detachment. So in the book, what we say is these basic human capacities, our capacity, you know, to for empathy, to pick up the feelings of other people, and for caring, to care about what happens to ourselves and others, and for cooperation. These are basic human capacities, but if you want to set up a hierarchy, if you want to make some humans superior and others inferior, you have to interfere with these relational capacities. So what patriarchy does is it has to subvert these human relational capacities, and it does so, and I mean, in terms of gender, in other words, for telling boys what they have to do to be real boys or one of the boys, which is not feel feelings that are in patriarchy labeled feminine. And for girls, don't say what you're feeling and thinking, then nobody is with you, so you're being all alone. So patriarchy subverts the human capacity to, you know, repair breaks in relationship. And therefore, it's driven by a psychology that makes loss irreparable. What we say is, as humans, we resist losing these relational capacities. So we all have within us a healthy resistance to the, you know, to patriarchy. And that's, I mean, just to finish the thought, that's why patriarchy continues in part through the use of force and also through silencing women. I mean, you asked before, what changed since I wrote the book? Is I suddenly realized, you know, you can go way back and all the people who have said love is the answer, you know, I mean, whether it's Einstein or Christ or Mother Teresa, I mean, you just name it.
Or the Beatles.
Or Gandhi. Or the Beatles.
All we need is love.
All we need is love, and then everybody laughs, you know. Make
right.
love, not war.
Right.
What our book shows is, I mean, love is the answer, but it shows what is interfering with love, what is subverting our desire, basically, to live with integrity, that is, with our own voice, in relationship with others, which is something we all basically, you know, from the beginning want to do. So what the question really is, what happens? And that's what our book shows. As a healthy body resists infection, a healthy psyche resists this loss of relationship. In other words, a healthy psyche resists patriarchy. So within us, we all have the seeds of this resistance. And so, in that sense, our book is optimistic. You know, in our book, what we say is that the opposite of patriarchy is democracy, you know, which rests on equal voice. And where gender is really irrelevant, where democracy, like love, depends on everyone having a voice. And the other point we make is that patriarchy, you know, by undermining, by subverting our capacity to, you know, to repair the inevitable breaks. I mean, in the course of our daily lives, we move in and out of touch with ourselves and other people. And what our response, you know, is really to repair those ruptures, and patriarchy subverts that response.
I never thought about the hierarchy, even, you could just say hierarchy, right, as being just this inherently flawed system that does not allow us to connect. So it's like,
or that really depends on our not connecting. So it's as harmful to men as well as women. It's harmful to everyone across the whole gender spectrum. And yes, men are offered, in a sense, power. Or not all men, for sure, but certain men, the patriarchs, are offered power in exchange for sacrificing basically parts of their humanity. And, you know, like girls being offered relationship if they won't say what they're really feeling and thinking, it's really a bad bargain, and, you know, one that we should all refuse. So in our understanding of patriarchy, the opposite is democracy, and you know, the requisites for democracy, which is to have a voice and to live in relationship, not sort of wall yourself off and so forth, is the same as the requisites for love. So that's, thank you for, really, I'm just thrilled to be part of your fund drive.
Yeah, and again, I think of this another thing. You know, you talk about the healthy resistance, and I love that because often we get shamed for resisting in this culture.
Mm.
And it's like, no, wait, that's the right thing to do. And I say, resist corporate control of our media by owning it right here and now at KSFR, and that's by calling 505-428-1393. It's easy to feel very powerless today in the corporate environment that we know we're all living in. But this is what preserves those community connections between each other and ourselves, keeps that part of us alive, engaged in life. And that's what we're doing right here in the studio and with you out there who are listening. And we appreciate your contributions so much. Again, please join 505-428-1393.
You know, public radio is basically everyone has a voice. And so it's the essence of democracy. And we really need to support public radio and resist the corporate takeover of the media, totally.
And it is your chance to repair that. It is not all hope is lost. No, it happens right here and now by us taking individual action and connecting with what matters to us and making our voices heard. So literally, it is not just a contribution. It is your voice being expressed to sustain, but also to preserve. Preserve.
You know, it's interesting that your staff member mentioned Me Too. And, you know, before, in patriarchy, if a woman spoke out about her experience of being abused or raped or molested, you know, it's like everyone stood back, other women, to watch what happened to her, and she was shamed and so forth. So with the Me Too movement, I mean, it was really a movement of women leaving patriarchy, because when one woman spoke about her experience, other women, instead of just saying nothing, came forward and said, you know, me too. That happened to me too. I know what you're talking about, because that was my experience. And that, you know, that led to a crescendo of voices. And I love it that it was a 15-year-old Norwegian girl, you know, who really had not spoken very much at all, that suddenly spoke out about climate change and made that sign and stood in front of the parliament. And now last Friday we had school children all over the country not going to school to protest climate change. You know, the children really do have to speak out if nobody's going to speak out about climate change, because they're the ones who are going to live in this world. So a voice can make a huge difference is what I'm saying. And that's what public radio is.